Welcome to Clock Choke, a grappling culture podcast by Shoiro. Jumping back onto Clock Choke, today we talk with a good friend, Kenneth Capello, legendary photographer, taking some really, really amazing photos in hip hop, music, and pop culture all over from New York. Huge mixed martial arts fan, a lover of jiu-jitsu and anything martial arts. And he's just a good buddy and just wanted to pick his brain on a bunch of stuff. So without further ado, let's bring him on. Kenneth, thank you very much, man, for jumping on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Kenneth, so let's dive right in, man. And I think me and you gone back, known each other for a little bit and just kind of working together. But most people don't know. They know you for shooting a bunch of magazines and covers and a bunch of popular celebrities and rappers and people in the music and hip hop industry. But let's jump straight into MMA. People don't know you're a crazy MMA hardcore fan. When did that start and how did that kind of come about?
Everyone else kind of in our age bracket, I saw, the first few UFCs on home video from Blockbuster at some point in my life. And I remember how much I loved watching it. And then like anything, it kind of went away, right? Those things became harder to find and the UFC went through some dark times. But, you remember those old fights with Poise and Shamrocks and, Kimo, who's the guy who carried the cross?
Kimo. Yeah, no, it was Kimo.
It went away and yada, yada. But anytime you could find it, you would watch it. Right. And then for whatever reason, I grew up, getting in a lot of fights. And I know the reasons, but it was because I was a skater and skateboarding was different in the 80s than it is now. Skateboarding was punk rock. It led to punk rock. You look different. It wasn't accepted. I lived in Beaumont, Texas, and Houston, Texas, and Sour Lake, Texas. I lived all over Texas. And basically, I found out from seventh grade on that my life was probably going to involve defending myself at least once a week at some point. So I got in a lot of fights in Texas. I hit a lot of people over the head with skateboards, whatever it took. The rednecks, they're tough. they like to fight. And that was fine. I actually was friends with some redneck. I learned a lot. But I started fighting a lot. And then, you could still find some MMA stuff here and there. And then, obviously in probably 2004, I don't remember, MMA popped back up on our TVs, I was still following it before that, when I could, but finding those pay-per-views wasn't easy at that point. The first UFC card I went to was UFC 50, I think. I think it was Tito versus Shamrock. That was my first fight, live fight.
That's a big one. So you made it to that one. That was iconic fight at the time.
Yeah. I went to that fight and I think back that was a while ago, I think it was at the Mandalay Bay or some shit. I just, got engulfed in it. And it right when I started getting, from the dark days, I'll call it, which I followed when I could, when I had more accessibility to it, was right about when I was trying to clean up my lifestyle in New York. I was trying to tone the party down. And I started,
and this is 2005 ish, you said?
Yeah, 4 or 5 maybe. And I started, I had a couple, we're doing a lot of drugs and stuff. And I started watching MMA, made me want to work out. I never worked out in my life. I never lifted a weight in my life. And I joined a gym down the block from my house, New York Health and Racquet Club. And I got a personal trainer and I slowed down my drinking and I started working out a lot, and I was so into MMA that I was always talking about like jujitsu and this and that. I didn't know anything about it. You know, I'd hit the bag, thought I was a badass, wasn't. And one of my, the dude that was training me was like a white or a blue belt. It's somewhere in New York. I don't remember. And after we would train, there was like this warm up spot at the gym where people would warm up like on this like mat. And we would roll like in the middle of the gym. And I literally was just fighting for my life for the most part. And then there was like this other dude, there was a trainer there that was like a purple belt at like Henzo's maybe, I don't remember, but he was like better at it. And he'd come over and beat me up. And then I was super into it, but I had no idea what I was doing. Obviously I was holding on for dear life for the most part around someone's neck, probably with a closed guard. And I fucking loved it, man. And I got really into working out and kind of progression got, you know, was going to all the fights. Like I was going to a lot of fights, traveling, going to fights. Like I'd met Liddell in LA at in the lobby of a hotel. We became friends. He would give me tickets. It was cool. And then I was shooting for a magazine called Black Book in New York one day, and I was shooting LCD Sound System, which was a big pop band in the mid late 2000s. And the dude who runs the band, his name is James Murphy. He's like, you know,
he was training at Henzel's for a little bit, right?
Well, here's what happened. So I met James. I was shooting LCD Sound System. I think I was wearing a UFC hoodie, like at Herb. And James commented on my hoodie. And he's like, you like MMA? And I was like, this is like, you know, people's MMA wasn't, you know, it wasn't like as big as it is. And I was like, yeah. And we started talking about fighting. And James Murphy was a hardcore. He knew his shit. And we became friends because there wasn't many friends in our scene that could talk about MMA. And I brought him to some fights, yada, yada. And James had a record label called DFA. And James was really, you know, kind of like made things happen. And he decided to start a DFA jiu-jitsu club.
Wow, I had no clue.
Yeah, so they had an office and a recording studio somewhere. I think it was in like the 20s somewhere, Midtown-ish area. And he was like, yeah, we're starting this thing, come through. I went through there and there was all these kind of indie rock dudes and some other normal random dudes. They had cleared this room where they record and put mats down. Somehow he got like a sponsorship through Adidas. Adidas sent like 40 gis, 20 gis. We were going through this duffel bag. Everyone's trying to find a gi that fit them. And he had a purple belt from Henzo's. I won't name names because I guess you're not supposed to come to, you know, outside of your school, but this purple belt Brazilian would come and kind of run the class. And no one knew jiu-jitsu in that class. No one, you know, a bunch of assholes, like drunks with gis on, learning jiu-jitsu. That was my first invitation to jiu-jitsu. I went there. I don't know how long I went for. I can't remember. Probably 6 months, maybe.
What year was this? You know, I remember where,
05.
Wow, shit.
Maybe. Yeah, 05. And I would go there in my gi and the teacher would teach. And, you know, I don't know how much what the teaching was like, but it was cool. It was my intro, you know, and like I was probably hungover most of the time or whatever. But I can remember just like, you know, trying to understand jiu-jitsu there. And the only memory I have of that is getting James in a triangle and then he stacked me and he weighs like 240 and my neck's never been the same.
Oh shit. I know, yeah. Your neck is not good. Your neck is it's always jacked up. Are you crediting to that time when you tried to get the triangle on James from
without a doubt?
That was the classic.
That was what I did. So that was my intro to jiu-jitsu. And for, I think, you know, whatever, then I moved to LA like in 07 because I needed to escape New York because I was just doing way too much drugs and partying and doing dumb shit. Not like I wasn't like, but I knew people that were worse, but like, I just couldn't stay motivated, focused on what I wanted to do. I wanted to get more into working out. I wanted to change my lifestyle. So I moved out here And when I moved out here, I was looking for a Krav Maga gym because I had started. Okay. So I started taking Krav as well in New York. Seth Goldfarb had a guy that would teach us Krav in this like weird studio. So I was really into the fight thing, and I was taking Krav in New York for a while, and with the jiu-jitsu thing, and I liked it. But I had taken a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and I remember one time in Krav, I challenged the instructor a little bit. He said, "Well, if I do this, you can't do this." And I go, "Yeah, I could. What about this?" And I did some jiu-jitsu. I forgot what I did in front of the class. He said, "Well, come try it." I think I shot, I don't know what I did. I don't know if I shot a double leg and took him down or if I got him in a trunk. He did some, anyway, I did it in front of the class and his ego, he slammed me hard on a wood floor. It was like, "How'd that work out?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I mean, you're a black belt in Krav, you know?" I was just trying to bring up like, what if you, you know, because we never talked about jiu-jitsu aspects of Krav yet. We were only talking about the striking aspects of it. And it was fun. I loved it.
Because Seth, but at the same time, you're talking about Seth, and Seth is like hardcore jiu-jitsu, right? Like, was he trying to drag you into like the gym at the same time too, since he knew you, since you guys were both playing like Krav?
I had done the jiu-jitsu shit, and I was talking to Seth. We both were in MMA. And he was like, "Yo, I'm taking these Krav Maga classes. You should come through." And that he got me into it.
No shit.
So I took Krav. No, you know, Seth don't want to be touched. Like, it was hard sparring with Seth.
For sure. For
but,
sure.
Can't touch him. But so then I got really into, I was making my way into combat sports. You know what I mean? Like, I'd taken some weird jiu-jitsu classes, like in a recording studio with a purple belt from Henzo's. I was doing weird Krav Maga classes in like a dance studio with some random dude who worked for Time Warner in Brooklyn. And I was getting more into lifting weights. So then I finally moved to LA. I just left New York on a whim. And when I got out here, I joined the Krav Maga gym on Purdue, like by the 405. And I started doing Krav Maga, so, you know, continuing my path from New York. And then one day I looked, and, you know, I saw they were doing no-gi jiu-jitsu. And it was that Gracie guy from the original Robert White dude. He was one of the original Gracie dudes from Hermosa.
I think I know who you're talking about. I think
old,
I know you're
older white guy. Yeah. Robert something. Anyway, so I was doing Krav, and I saw they had a jiu-jitsu class, and, you know, I went in, and it wasn't a very inviting environment. I remember I had like long hair, and I used to wear it in a top knot. And I used to, the teacher used to like make fun of my hair and ask me if I was a woman or some shit, like whatever. And I remember it was like tap out era. It was like kind of tap out shirty in there and kind of a lot of tough guys. And being it was in a Krav Maga school, the rules seemed to be a little different depending on who you rolled with sometimes. I remember I'd always be nervous going to that class because, you know, I'd be fighting for my life usually. And there were dudes in there that would do shit like take your t-shirt and wrap it across your face and try to choke you with it, you know, in no-gi. And, you know, this is before no one was wearing a rash guard. I didn't know what a rash guard was. I was in there and just like, you know, gym shorts and a t-shirt. And, I remember one time I was fighting this dude and he mounted me and I posted up and he bent my fingers backwards. And I was like, I don't know if that's jiu-jitsu. And he's like, "Aikido, bitch," or something. And I was like, "Yeah, but I didn't elbow you in the face when I had side control. Like, we're doing jiu-jitsu." It was like kind of anything went, you know what I mean? And people would like rip things and like grab a key lock and rip it or whatever, or Kimura. It was just like, I'd go in there and be like, "All right, like I'm a never really done much of this, but I'm having a great time doing it." And I remember when I, you know, I'd catch a blue belt in a guillotine, I'd feel pretty psyched, but it was cool. And so I went there for a while and trained there. And then they fucking started doing CrossFit there. And I was looking in the window of someone doing CrossFit. I was like, "What's that?" And like, "That's CrossFit." So I started doing CrossFit. And then CrossFit, the bug hit me hard, and I started doing a lot of CrossFit. And then a CrossFit gym opened down the block from my house in West Hollywood, Brick. And in the beginning, they were offering Krav Maga because the owner of Brick, JP, has a very extensive fight background. He used to train at Jackson's. He was going to fight pro. He was like Clay Guida's main training. You know, he has hundreds of kickboxing fights. And he's gnarly. And so when I saw the banner, CrossFit Krav Maga, a block from my house, I quit Krav Maga worldwide and I joined Brick. And then shortly he dismantled the Krav Maga thing because no one was signing up for it. And then I just like fell into the CrossFit world. Right. And they had kickboxing there. I was kickboxing a little bit, yada, yada. And then there was no jiu-jitsu for many years. It was just, you know, doing some kickboxing and working out. I got like really,
you were heavy into CrossFit at that time too, right? You dove in for a little bit.
I drank the Kool-Aid, unfortunately. Now my back is never the same. But so I'm training, you know, just training. And then I don't know what year, I think 2011, I noticed a guy named Kenny Florian, was posting and geotagging a street up the block from my street. And I was like, oh shit, he was in my neighborhood. And then one day he posted a camera and said, "Does he know how to use this? Like, can someone help me use this?" And I hit him up and I told him how to use it. And he was like, "Oh, thanks, man." We started talking. And then this girl named Sarah from New York, that is a makeup artist, used to do jiu-jitsu. And her brother's a jiu-jitsu teacher, Sarah Glick. Her brother is some sort of
Brian jiu-jitsu in Brooklyn.
Yes. Was like, "Yo, I know Kenny. Like, when I'm coming out to LA, I'll introduce you guys." And I was like, "Yeah, I talk to him on the internet sometimes." One day she was out here, she had lunch with him, brought him over to the crib. And man, we started, Kenny was out of shape. He had, you know, it was after his injury. That's why he quit, retired, his back injury, wasn't training. And I started I co-signed him into Brick without, you know, just walk into Brick based on his credentials and shit. JP was a fan. And we started training CrossFit and Kenny started getting in shape. We started running a lot in the hills. He started I could run circles around Kenny. And then within like 3 months, I was like a mile behind. You know, and we started training and then we started training in my garage. I was like, I want to learn how to fight better. And we started training mostly striking for 2 years in my garage. Like he was like he started teaching me how to fight. And like, I learned more under Kenny in like 2 years than I could learn in 30 under anyone else, I think. And just practicality stuff and footwork stuff. And like, you're not the biggest guy. You're not the strongest guy. You got to understand like your strengths, you know? And then I had a bad back injury from CrossFit. So I knew I wanted to get back into jiu-jitsu and I knew I'm with the right guy, but my back was hampering me. And then finally my back slowed down on the pain. And Kenny said, "Are you ready to start learning jiu-jitsu?" Cause he was ready to start rolling. Cause he didn't roll a lot.
He
rolled a little bit here and there, go out to the valley to a couple places. And I said, "Yeah, what kind of mat should I buy?" Told me what mats to buy. I went online, I custom ordered mats that would fit from wall to wall in my whole garage. They came in the mail. I put them down. I said, "Let's go." So my fight training with Kenny went from not just striking, it went to like learning jiu-jitsu. So it started off with me and him. Brought a couple guys over, Magnus Unar, one of my best friends, a couple other guys. One of my photo assistants at the time, who's now a fucking great photographer, Scott Leone, used to fight amateur boxing. He used to train at Wild Card. He had hands that I always tell him on set, like, "Your hands are cool, but they ain't going to work off your back. Because like, you're going to knock me out, but if you get on the ground, you're over." And I was like, "You should come train." I kept telling him for years, "Come train jiu-jitsu." One day I brought him to the garage. I showed him basic shit, mount, guard, just the basics, guard, like half guard, side control, you know, just the stuff. Your goal is to pass this, get here, get this position, get a submission. You know, he got so fucking into it now. Like I can't, he destroyed, like he arm bars me every time now, but it just started growing right in my garage. Like, so there was a little crew now. I made a name for the garage, right? I made an Instagram for the garage. And, you know, I think back on it now And I think, man, I had one-on-one teaching with one of the best MMA fighters in the world, mentally, physically, with Kenny. And I had a group of about 4 to 5 people. And then the people that Kenny would bring in as it went on down the road, Ryan Hall, stopping me in a roll. Hey, Kenneth, do you mind if I show you how to improve this back cold? You know, people like Ryan Hall, Mac Danzig. I've introduced Mac and Kenny. Mac is one of the first dudes. I met Mac Danzig back at the UFC days, and he hated MMA, hated the scene. He was like a vegan skater. And me and him connected. So when I came to LA, we'd always keep in touch. So I introduced Mac and Kenny, and then Mac would come through, and then you name it, you know, Ryan would bring Jeff Glover, you know, people were coming through, and the garage became a little thing.
Bouchesh and those guys cruising over, were shooting some stuff in the garage, yeah, and a bunch of
people were just coming through, you know. And I never probably realized at the time what a gym I had there to be able to learn jiu-jitsu. And I learned jiu-jitsu how I wanted to learn jiu-jitsu, because Kenny asked me, I don't think you were taught jiu-jitsu right. It didn't keep your interest. I'm going to teach you backwards. He's like, usually we teach position before submission. I'm going to teach you submission before position to get you in love with this. And that's what he did. And until to this day, I might not be able to scissor sweep you, but I will sure heel hook you.
Totally. No, I remember that, dude, because I was like, you're like, hey, I don't know how to do a fucking scissor sweep or do this, but like, I'm like, yo, you're moving way too good for like not knowing a scissor sweep. You're like, no, it's just because the way Kenny taught me, like he bypassed a lot of that stuff, and we kind of just went to the meat and the potatoes of it.
Right. So I'd go back later and fill in the blanks, and I still get scissor swept. Like, I don't even see him coming. I can usually catch that one arm base on it, but. Or there's funny things, like there's just funny things that I never learned how to do that like a white belt can do, but I can do, you know, but like I have, you know, other things that I've been taught by like really high level guys that I worked on, and that, you know, I'd work on the things I wanted to work on and go back and fill. But I'll also tell you this, I didn't want to train in the gi for most of my jiu-jitsu thing.
I remember that.
Because I grew up fist fighting in the street and watching MMA, and it didn't make any sense to me because I knew I was never going to compete. Now it makes sense to me because movement is movement, but I trained under Kenny for a long time, and I'm a 4-stripe white belt to this day because he wasn't going to belt me until I became fluent in the gi. And when Meraki opened, I really started training in the gi quite a bit. And I remember I didn't go, you know, with my job at the time traveling, I wasn't consistent enough in the gi. And I remember the last time I was on the mat where Kenny was there in Meraki a year ago, I was in a no-gi class. And Kenny came up to me after and said, "You're a no-gi guy." Because he would watch me in the gi and probably shake his head. And then he saw me, and I maybe sort of proved to him that I do know some things he taught me. Because Kenny is the type of dude, if he teaches you this stuff, he wants to see you apply this stuff. So he watched me in a no-gi class. I think I was rolling with Danny, that used to be at AOJ with all the tattoos, and he loves to fuck you up and wrist lock you. And, you know, he definitely subbed me, but I made the rounds with a few different people, and Kenny came out and was like, "Yeah, you're a no-gi guy, man. Like, look good. You look good. You've been training. It's great." So that was like a cool thing to hear, because I never, you know, it sucks. I've been training jiu-jitsu for this amount of time off and on, and people will go, "What's your belt?" And I'm always like, "Yeah, I'm a white belt." And then I'll roll and they're like, "You're not a white belt." And I'm like, "Well, I am though."
For sure. You're like sandbagger. They're like,
yeah,
sandbagger.
They think but I'm also not a blue belt. In my head, I'm not a blue belt. Like I've tapped purple belts, but like, I don't understand the belt system, because some gyms will hand you a belt based on time. And some gyms, you know what I mean? Like, we used to have a lot of purple belts come Meraki, and the white belts Meraki would handle them just because of the level of training, right?
Totally.
And, but then like when I took photos at the Royale competition for a show you roll, the blue belt comp, I looked at Magnus and I was like, "You got me fucked if you think I want a blue belt." You know, like I'd rather be a soft whatever belt. I mean, a hard whatever belt you have than a soft belt above it. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe that's just the hardcore punk rock in you, though. I mean, maybe that's just like you as a person, like values and just kind of coming up hard in punk rock and kind of earning it, right?
I just
like,
don't care about
personality wise.
Yeah, and I also don't care. At first, I cared about the belt, but now the belt doesn't interest me. I'm not going to compete. I just want to learn how to submit people, like, if I have to in the street. And also, it's fun rolling with your friends in like competition. Like, we're all fucking competitive. So, belt in the end, I was like, if I don't get the belt, I don't get the belt.
But kind of even transitioning there too, Kenneth, like you're super passionate about mixed martial arts and martial arts in general and the sport and the culture of it. But then also like jiu-jitsu, it's like you found like a love and a passion for it, you know, in some way, shape or form. But like, even with just like the Laurel, you know, the Laurel Canyon Fight Club and that kind of like you were saying it, you weren't sure what it was at the time, but now looking back at it, it was like a moment in time that like, it was a place and a venue for people to like fall in love with this thing for a certain period of time. That was special, you know, like it was like unique.
It was very unique. There's a lot of people that were doing it at the Laurel Canyon Fight Club, besides the jiu-jitsu cats that found out about it and came through, were people that like maybe weren't jiu-jitsu people. Like
Scott
had no idea what jiu-jitsu was. This kid now is a jiu-jitsu junkie. Like he can't stop. There's a band called Salem or electro band. Jack from Salem would come through like in like a soccer jersey and roll. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we've had Bushesha in my garage, right? We've had like the most random. It was a cool thing because it was invite only. There was no egos. It was a very diverse crowd of people. And it was in a fucking garage in Laurel Canyon, you know, like, and people would DM me constantly. Can I come train? And I'd be like, nah, I mean, I can't really. I got to talk, you know, Kenny's running the class, the thing. You know, if Kenny wasn't doing it, I could bring people. But I always would ask Kenny, you know, who could come, because Kenny was showing his shit. You know how jiu-jitsu is. You got your fun, you got your stuff, and you got your stuff. Like, that you don't show everyone, right? We're doing the stuff, right? So it was a very small knit group of people, and not just anyone could roll up. And it was, looking back on it and looking at the Instagram, it was fucking cool, man. It was really cool.
And kind of like, it's like, I remember, cause we were kind of in it. What you were doing there was just, it was rad, you know, like, and I was just like a fan of it. And like you brought us along for the ride and just like, it was cool because it was unique. Like you're saying, it wasn't the average jiu-jitsu person there, you know, you might've just had a random person that was like kind of into it, but like they weren't the average jiu-jitsu person, you know?
And I think that's how I met you.
It was a little early too. Yeah, I think so.
I think
we got linked somehow and then.
Yeah. Based on Kenny in the garage, you reached out to me. You recognized there was something cool going on.
I think like Seth and some of the other guys are like, hey, yeah, Kenneth, like, you know, like definitely you guys need to connect, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, totally. And then I think we just started like, I think at that point, that's when we started like shooting a bunch of stuff for the brand. And it was like super progressive. Like it's like now it's like mimicked and copied a lot. But at that time, they're like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, what's that?
It's funny you say that because I literally think between me being having a photography style and shooting jiu-jitsu and my style of shooting it and those projects with Rob Abeda with the blood choke project, that style has been ripped off countless now. It's funny. I never saw a jiu-jitsu shot like that before. And I'm not saying this, like you could tell me I'm fucking insane. Maybe I am, but it definitely has been shot more like this now. And I think the blood choke thing was a big one. But yeah, it made sense for you to link because I had this place and I'm a photographer and we're on the same page, jiu-jitsu, kind of looking at it through a different lens. And then I have this like little dojo. And I remember, I don't remember what our first shoot was, but I can remember like you coming up with the gear and Ryan Hall and me and Kenny were in the garage and just put them in the gear and just did our thing. It wasn't like a photo shoot. It was more like just like the thing we do. And I'm taking photos, right?
And I remember, I think we did the Into the Void, we hosted the Into the Void show, and they were like, hey, let's put Kenna's photos up, you know? And like, it was just like rad. It was like stuff that hasn't been seen, tight stuff. And I think even when we were like working together, you're like, hey, how do you want to shoot it? And I was like, dude, just shoot the way you want to shoot. I don't want to like interfere in any of this. I'll give you like a little direction on maybe getting a few more like angles of shots that we need to capture. But like, we wanted like a fresh look on it from your lens, you know? And I think that was like really cool and interesting. To like, right. like bring that to the community, you know, and also to the culture of it, you know?
Right.
And then I think it was a little early, but now it's cool because I think the you know, it's kind of transcended and inspired, you know, new looks or old looks to kind of like reshape what it is today. Right. But kind of being on the early side of that, Kenny, kind of transitioning a little bit to like the photography side, like, can you like, give us like a little bit of maybe how that was for you also, like, in, you know, that's your career, that's your profession. On like the early days in New York and how you kind of got into photography shooting then back in the day, you know?
Back in the day?
Yeah.
Man, you know, I moved to New York, like my upbringing was it was good. I'm not going to act like it was patchy. Some family stuff. My mom was bipolar. And didn't work out in high school. And I ended up moving to Austin. I dropped out of high school and just left home. My dad dropped me off on a street corner in Austin. And I slept on a lawn chair in my friend's yard. I was a skater. All I cared about was skateboarding. And I'd eat like bean tacos from wherever, Taco Bell. And I slept in a lawn chair. And I slept on some couches and I finally made my way. I was washing dishes and ended up moving to New York the same way I moved to Austin. I had some friends going up to play CMJ, punk band. And I jumped in the van and my mountain bike fit in the van. And I stayed in New York and I just didn't go home. And I lived in Fort Greene. And I made my way through, this is like 1994 in New York City, you know. My friend Matt Sinzala, a kid I grew up with, hip-hop writer. He used to write for like Rap Pages and all these hip-hop magazines, The Source. And he lived in Fort Greene with some rap producers. And I ended up crashing his floor for a while. And, you know, working bar backing jobs, cafe jobs. Anyway, 96 rolls around. Wild in the streets, end up going to punk shows, hardcore shows. These dudes used to come into happy hour every day, these kind of cool looking dudes. And I talked to them every day as I was washing glasses. I worked at the beauty bar on 14th Street. It's kind of a hip bar. And I said, what do you guys do for a living? I see you in here every day at happy hour. Oh, we build sets. I was like, what is that? Like, we work for a photographer. We build his sets. And I was like, oh, I was like, how much money do y'all make a day? Like $150. I was making like $50-$60 a night, you know, unless it was a weekend night. And I said, I want to do that. Yeah. You know how to use a drill? I said, I mean, I used to build skateboard. Sure. I know, I think enough. And I gave him my number and 3 months went by. And one day I checked my answering machine and I got a call from some lady. And she said, I got your number from George, yada, yada. Can you come in and work tomorrow? I said, sure. She was the creative director for a photographer named David LaChapelle. I started working there like part-time between the bar and there when I could. And next thing I know, I was hired full-time as the art director's assistant. And I was, you know, my last day at David's studio was September 11th when the planes hit. And I, you know, besides having this crazy job that in a photography studio, it wasn't even on the photo side. It was on the you know, making sure the sets look correct. And I was a prop shopper. I was like part of the prop. I would like shop for David's props and this and that. And like, if I was on set and David would be like, hey, I need a plug outlet, put in that wall. I would execute that, make it happen. I'd kind of crew up the crews. I was a necessity at his studio at some point. I was part of the team that made his studio work. And I was also a photographer. I took photos. Like, my dad gave me a camera when I was a kid. I always took photos of skating and punk shows. But photography wasn't, how do you make fucking a living taking photos? Like, how does that even happen? I didn't know where photos came from. But working for David told me where photos came from. I was in a photo studio. I put the pieces together, stylist, studio, makeup, hair. Like, I was a fly on the wall. I was a sponge. Yeah, it just brought me into the world. And, you know, it got me shooting photos more again. I was like, this is what I want to do. This was my passion when I was a kid. This is what I want to do. And, you know, I was in a studio apartment, sharing a studio apartment, like in New York back then, 97, 98. And yeah, man. And then, like, just started, you know, we were shooting for the magazines, the fashion. I just started taking photos and I just, you know, did it. Like, you know, people think everyone comes from, I just did it. I moved to New York and did it. Like, that was my whole thing. I want to move to the most expensive, craziest city. And I remember when I wanted to move, it was either New York, SF, or Chicago. I don't know why SF and Chicago were on that list, because it seems fucking insane. But I moved there and I found my thing. And segued out of being, and, you know, when I was a barback, I was starting to tour manage and tour with the bands and sell t-shirts and tour manage and shit. And I thought that's what I was going to do. And I love that because I really am into music. But the photo thing came and it was great. And I worked really hard at it. And here I am.
And what was that like? What year was that? What year was that when you were working with David? And then, what'd you transition to after that, right after that, shooting photos in New York?
I worked from David from 96 until that second plane woke me up and hit that second tower. That was the last day of work. I walked in the studio that day and our job was canceled, you know, obviously. I remember I was at Sidewalk Cafe 7A with David watching the news, eating. And that was our last day of work because New York was shut down. And I remember I was offered a car to drive back to LA about 2 weeks after 9/11. And I was probably drunk that whole 2 weeks. I was probably a mile and a half, 2 miles from the towers. And I could hear the second plane. The first one I would probably was asleep. And the second one, my alarm went off. And then the second one hit right after my alarm went off. And someone said, hey, I have a producer called me. He's like, I have a drive away car in New York that needs to be driven back to LA. It was rented in LA. It was a big ass excursion, one of those big long excursions. And I had a buddy that we needed to move to LA anyway. So we loaded up that excursion and I came out to LA for 6 months back in 2000, whenever 9/11 was, 2000, 2001. And at that time, right before I left, I had shot my first photo for a magazine for Mass Appeal. And it ended up on the cover. And it was my first thing I ever shot. And I got lucky. And it was the Iraq crew in New York City. They were my buddies, Dash, Earsnot. And it ended up on the cover. So then I came to LA because New York was just a mess. And then the phone kind of started ringing, like Nylon call, you know, magazines were calling me. They wanted me to shoot, but they saw this thing. And I was in LA and it wasn't like that. There wasn't an editorial base here like that. So if I wanted to take photos at that time, I needed to go back to New York. So I went on back to New York in 2001 or two and started my photo career in 2001. Yeah, so in 2001. And then circle back around and then left New York again in 07 once I was a real photographer.
And like you're super humble, Kenneth, but I mean, like, we've talked about this off podcast and like you shot pretty much everybody. Right. And I think maybe nowadays is a lot different than it was back then. And everyone kind of, you know, is calling themselves a somewhat of a photographer because they have a good Instagram filter or they have a good camera. A creative director, whatever you want to call yourself, but you come from an era that, it was a different time. But like, even just on that stuff, like what's some of the stuff and some of the cool, like, stories that you've had that you shot, you know, through time. You shot Tyson, you shot everybody, right? And you've been in like every, like any cover that maybe a photographer aspires to. Like, what are some of your fun stories and time, just like through that time till kind of today, or ones that stand out to you that you thought were fun or interesting story wise, or people that you shot that were fun for you personally, you know?
The cool thing about photography for me is I get to walk into a person's life for 30 minutes or 8 hours. You know, I'm stuck with that person. I have to talk to that person. I'm taking photos of that person. They're in front of me. They're my subject. So whatever it is, I gotta like communicate with this person, right? Solve, problem solve, make them look comfortable, make good photos. And it's cool to be able to meet people that maybe I don't like, or I do like, or I don't know, and meet them and take something out of that scenario. And, you know, there's been fucking great shoots. There's been weird shoots, and there's been bad shoots. Tyson, you brought Tyson a couple times. You know, I shot Tyson for Supreme. I shot the Supreme shirt that everyone, you know, that you can buy for $1,000 now. Yeah, it was not a good time in Tyson's life when I shot that photo. And it was a weird experience. But it was also an amazing experience. You know, I got to, like, I thought Tyson might beat me up at one point. And I was down for that because it was Mike Tyson. And I knew I'd have a story about it at one point in my life. He did pick me up and shake me, and like he said some crazy shit to me that I don't know if I want to talk about, but put it this way, my assistants were hiding in the other room.
Wild.
It was wild. It was like at his lowest point. And there was a lot of suspect characters in that suite in Vegas. But it was,
you know, it
was fucking awesome.
You said something, I think whenever we were hanging too, and like, you were like, we were just talking, I think, and we were just like, man, like, what's the hardest shit to shoot, you know, that people just have a hard time with, and like stuff you enjoy. And I think you, I'm not quoting you, but I think you're like, I don't know, like for some reason, just people like have a hard time like shooting people in like hip hop or rap. And, you know, like it might be a 3 hour shoot and like, they might be 2 hours late, but like for you, you were like, I actually don't mind. Like I actually really like shooting. Working with like hip hop rappers and stuff like that. Like
100% still to this day. I was with Don Toliver yesterday. I mean, because a lot of photographers don't want to deal with that. Yeah. You know,
yeah, for sure.
I waited 8 hours for Young Thug this year. He was 8 hours late to a shoot. And the creative director said, let's call this. And I said, are they saying he's going to come? Yes. It's just going to be 8 hours after our call time. And I said, I'm here. We're staying. Like, I flew in for this job from New York on a red eye. I'm tired as fuck, and I'll take a nap in the studio. But if I'm going to get him in front of my camera, because I didn't shot, we're going to stay here. And we did. And I have a good relationship with his team now, you know? Shot him multiple times.
But you've done that with multiple rappers, not just one. Like, is that something you've always had since like the early days of shooting in New York? Or is it just something that you're like, hey, these other studios or these other photographers won't put up with this shit? You know, I don't mind.
I mean, it's different maybe now, because I've shot two generations of rap music from 50 Cent, The Roots and The Clips and all that stuff to now this new, the new stuff. And I like both of it, you know? I'm not one of these people like, fuck the new stuff. Like, progression, man. You think when the Wu-Tang put their first record out, the old heads were like, this is cool? Fuck no. They're like, what is this weird shit? It's progressions. Things change. Music changes. Let the kids do what they're going to do. The reason I like shooting rap music, and it might be the same, I like the uncertainty. I like the bravado. Sometimes it feels like the new punk rock to me. I like what they give. I like what a lot of these young kids give. Like, I like the energy and the aggression. Maybe the same reason I like shooting fighters. You know, like, I like the uncertainty of it. I've had crazy stories. I've had people point guns at me. Like, you know, it's maybe, I don't know, maybe it's the same thing as like, I'm the type of person, like, I'm not a tough guy. I have more fight experience than the average person who doesn't. But like, I'm the type of person that runs into fires in the street. You know, like when I see someone getting beat up in the street, that's getting maybe ganged up, like, you know, unfairly beat up, I run into the fire. Like I have a bad habit of like getting involved in domestic dispute, you know, just like turning my car around, like talking, you know, like I don't know. I'm not like a thrill seeker, like an adrenaline junkie. Like I don't jump out of airplanes but like, I don't know. Like I like that energy. And I don't like seeing the underdog get taken advantage of, because I was definitely an underdog in many parts of my life. But I don't know, something about that energy. But I like shooting all kinds of shit. I like rap. I like shooting everything. But I'm known in the raps. Like I shoot a lot of rap music and a lot of music, you know. And like, what do I want to shoot? A guy that looks badass, has a lot of bravado, and has tattoos on his neck, maybe his face, that would give me a lot of looks into my camera? Or I want to shoot like four white dudes who are in a band, and like there's one in the front who's the singer, and like they're all like just standing there. Like what's more interesting for me? Not that. but do I shoot that? Sure.
A lot, like, and you do a bunch of commercial work, right? Like, you've done a ton of commercial work, Adidas, Nike, everybody. But like, the interesting part, like, you said something that's like progressive, and it seems like it's like a consistent thread throughout like your life. And you said something that was really fascinating when you were like, hey, you know, like, this is old rap, this is new rap. And, you know, like, as much as like the old heads are going to hate on the new heads, you keep a pretty open mind on whatever it is, and kind of tying into the new. Jumping onto the next one, like, where do you think that is in photography more so than anything else? When like, you know, like this is how it was in the old days. All the new kids are wondering like, hey, what do we do now? Do we go buy a Leica camera and like that, or a photographer now? Like what's your advice, and what's your, even just your take on the future of like taking photos and photography in general, like with the new generation and being progressive with it?
It's a lot, man, you know. When I started taking photos, there was no digital. Yeah. It's kind of math. You gotta like know how to, you gotta learn how to like, what's pushing film, what's pulling film, what, how do I light this? Like, how does this work? Taught myself, I'm self-taught, you know? Whereas now, digital is, which is a great thing, the digital, you know, everyone, when I started taking photos, who took photos? People that went and bought a camera and wanted to take photos. And that was who took photos. Now, every person in the world might have the best camera in the world in their pocket. So photography, since 2001, when I had my first real photo job, it's changed 1,000%. Because now everyone takes photos, everyone, which leads to problems in the photography thing sometimes. Because like you said, everyone is a fucking photographer, which is great. I love photography and I want people to take photos. But, you know, you got social photographer and everyone's a photographer, everyone's a creative, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it gets funny. It gets really funny because, you know, and it's the Wild West, right? Right now, because budgets, clients are looking at Instagram following numbers instead of work, hiring people based on their numbers instead of their photos. It's funny. It's the Wild West. So I always laugh, and some of my photographer friends are like, that's not my rate. I don't work for that. And I go, dog, there is no rate anymore. Like, you just got to maneuver through this how you think is appropriate. And like, I didn't grow up with money, man. So whether I make $20,000 for a photo shoot or $2,000 for a photo shoot, man, $2,000 would buy a lot of sushi. So, you know, I'm not going to take a job I'm going to get taken advantage of. You know, I'm going to make sure, you know, I know when I'm going to be taken advantage of and I'm not. I pick and choose.
Totally.
I work for free. For a lot of things, I work for product. I work, you know, people think if I shoot a magazine cover, I made a lot of money. Dog, if I'm shooting for a cool magazine, I'm paying for that shoot. People don't understand that. Oh, you shot that cover. of so-and-so, you must have made a lot of money on that. No, I actually spent money. You know what I mean? But it's going to lead to money because that's how you build a portfolio. So it's funny because like a lot of people are like, I see these younger photographers on Instagram, like, don't hit me up for a free job. It's like, if it's something you really want to shoot and it's not for an it's not an advertisement, hit me. You know what I mean? You got to shoot it. That's how you, I like taking photos. This isn't just my job. This is my passion. And then people hit me up. What kind of camera do you use? Say, that's cool if you want to know, but you getting the camera I use isn't going to make your photos good. You know what I mean?
Hey man, you can take for sure.
With anything. I like digital photos. I like iPhone photos. I like Polaroids. I like all, because you know, you got these people like fuck digital 30 hashtag 35 millimeter. What the fuck ever, man. Film is sick. Film is the bad.
The kids.
You got these kids on these film trips that like are like, yo, you shoot digital. Like I've had rappers be like, you shoot digital? And I'm like, yeah, dog, I shoot digital. Like, you know, because the film thing became a thing. And people were like, you don't shoot film. For like, sure, man, sure. I ain't got enough fucking room in my house for the amount of negatives I have. My whole office is negatives. You know what I mean? And the process has gotten a lot easier. But it's also gotten like a lot of bullshit because now clients, there's no process left in photography. They want the quick photo, quick. Nah, we don't need to retouch it. We got to post it tomorrow. Nah, dog, that's not. There's a process. There's a process to this. And digital has fucked up the process, you know, because it's so accessible. And people can actually can practice photography easier because you can see everything. But like art, there's a huge process in photography. If, for instance, people a lot of times, oh, we want to hire you to do this. Okay. Oh, but we don't want you to, we want you to use this camera. Why? Well, the file's bigger. And? Well, the file's bigger. And? We want you to use this. And I say, well, you do know that not one photo in my book that you hired me on was shot with that camera. There's a process. And also, fuck your file size because the file's big enough. Like, you can take a 35 millimeter neg.
I love it.
All 350, 72 DPI, and whatever. You know, whatever. And then also people will be like, hey, we're going to do the retouching in-house. Oh, okay. But you do know that's part of my process. The look of my photo is based on me and the relationship I have with my retouchers. Like, so you're going to give my photo to someone who doesn't know me, and isn't going to ask me any questions, and just do what they think is right. That's not part of my process of photography. Now, does that happen? Sure, it happens all the time. Sometimes, I mean, not lately because I fight. I'm really particular about it these days, and I fight about it. But it happened recently where I fought about it. But you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, right? Because you don't want to talk yourself out of a good client. But you know, some clients are cool enough to be like, "Hey, well, you can be in on the retouch, right?" So they'll send me the stuff, and then I'll guide the retoucher, right? So then it turns into my photo. But sometimes it doesn't. And it's fine, but people forget about the process of an art. There's a process in jiu-jitsu, there's a process in fighting, there's a process in photography. And, you know, it is what it is. But photographer these days has gotten easier, but it's also gotten harder because you're up against the internet. And people just want that Instagram post now. Oh, we don't need to retouch this or this or no, we'll just, or we'll hire, you know. It's like, no, dude, this is the process. This is why they look like this. But I love the fact that everyone can have access to photography. But I don't love the fact that everyone thinks they're that person after a year. I'm a creative director. Do you know how to make a deck? No. Well, what are you creative directing? Like what? It's weird. It's crazy, you know? So. But it's the Wild West. Times have changed. You know, this shit is soon we're going to have like these red cameras in like our phones.
Serious. You know? Straight up.
The red camera is going to be straight like up. A pocket cam. And that puts people that have like a background in cinematography puts them kind of out to sale. You know what I mean? And photographers, because like the younger kid that doesn't have the chops, but he has the camera, is going to get the job because his estimate is this and your estimate is this. And if that kid has the chops, cool. But most likely, I've lost jobs to social shooters. And then I get feedback from the client, be like, fuck, we fucked up hiring that person, you know? They didn't know how to light anything. They didn't know how to direct the talent. And I'm like, yeah, you hired him because he has 720,000 followers and he has a bunch of access to celebrities. But he also has a stage set up, like at a concert, a multi-million dollar stage set up running lights. So yeah, you're going to take a good photo. Photo is about lighting and about being able to direct someone. But then you put that person on set, and if they can't talk to the talent, or they don't know how to light the talent, or they don't know what is good light or bad light, you're going to run into problems. So unfortunately, it's turned to a numbers game. You know, oh, he's got this many followers. Oh, hire him. Okay, cool. You know,
well, on the flip side, thank God we got like some of the good guys left. And I think, man, you just hit on like all the stuff that's so true. And like you were saying, man, you could take a big paid commercial job or for the right client, and you do free shit, you do low paying shit, depending on if you think it's right for you. You know,
for
like, you have values. And like, I think that goes a long way. And I've known you for a while, and like, you've helped us with so much shit over the past. And like it's just wild. It's wild because there's not many people that like think of it in all different ways. Like you would, and also have a resume that and the stuff that you shot. It's like,
yeah,
once you shot like a bunch of cool things, you're like, no, I don't ever touch anything anymore, you know? So like you're very rare, and there's probably a lot of people like you, but it's refreshing to hear. To
younger
be honest,
photographers, you know, don't get it. They'll be like, they didn't want to pay me. I'm like, did you want to shoot it? Yeah, then go shoot it. Unless you're getting fucked by like a, you know, but I choose my battles. If you as Bear Shooter say, hey man, I can't pay for this. Who are we shooting? You know, Bushesh, oh, cool, I'll be there. Or, you know, you make your own decisions. Oh, send me some product. Oh, okay. I've flown out of state on no budget to shoot someone because I wanted to shoot that person. You know what I mean? I know the money's going to come from somewhere eventually, hopefully, you know? So.
That's rad.
And I work with your brand, like, you know, I've worked with brands I don't respect, right? Or not, like, not respect, like, but I'll do like a job, like, you know, don't care. But when I work for like someone, like, I'm in the MMA and jiu-jitsu, right? So like, I'm chomping at the bit to shoot fighters. So, and I like the brand. So you have to pick your battles. I always tell young photographers, you have to pick your battles. You know, like, don't turn away this because this could lead to this. Or also understand, you know, just because a company is a multi-zillion dollar company doesn't mean that project they're working on has that budget. You know what I mean? And you have to,
for sure,
you have, mm-hmm, to understand what it is and when you're getting taken advantage of and when you're not. And for me, sometimes if the budget's not where I want it or what have you, what am I doing tomorrow? Nothing. Well, let's go make this little paycheck that maybe is a little low, but I might make a friend, make a client, meet someone cool. It's an experience. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I do for a living, and it's also what I like to do. So you got to keep them next to each other and like kind of just figure it out, you know?
Super dope, man. Super dope, guys. And getting into closing, man, I think we're good on it. What's next for you, man? What's your I know we're in a crazy time, but what can we expect for, what's some of your future plans, and what do you want to close with?
Man, you know, life's fucking crazy, as we all know. And it's, my work this year was probably cut 70%. You know, I've worked 30 times, I think 28 times since the pandemic, which is pretty good compared to some people, you know, not as good probably to some as other people. I also am very, I'm a stickler with the mask stuff. I'm a very pro mask person. I did a shoot yesterday and a lot of people were wearing masks and I had to make a phone call and I was like, I'll walk. And everyone put their mask on. I didn't tell the people who weren't wearing masks. I don't want to make drama between me and people I'm working with. But I make a phone call to someone, you know, and say what it is. Because the thing is, call me a pussy, call me a snowflake, call me scared, call me whatever you want. If I get corona, my work's already been cut in more than half this year. If I get corona, it's getting really cut. You know, I got 3 ad jobs coming up. If I get corona tomorrow, I lose a lot of money. So whether you think the virus is real or fake or whatever the fuck you think, makes sense. You get corona through the mouth. It makes sense for me to cover my fucking mouth. So it's hard. I can't read people's faces. I can't read art directors' faces. I can't read energy with the mask on. You know, the talent is uncomfortable sometimes. It's another thing to have to navigate. And it's fine. We've adapted to it. But for me, you know, I don't think we're going to be out of this in 21. You know, I think 21 is going to pick up where we left off, obviously. Hopefully by mid-21 it starts. I don't think so. I think we're going to be in this next year. You know, that's just my personal thought. But I just want to keep on grinding and keep on creating good content. Also, people need to understand in this time where it's a little slower, it's a time to sharpen your knives. Don't sit around and complain. Fucking make your craft better or do whatever the fuck you meant to do, been meaning to do for the past 6 months at your house, or sharpen your skills, build a website. Fucking, there's a million things you can do that I don't have time to do when I am working on a more normal pace. So yeah, I look forward to closing this year out on a couple good jobs, which is going to happen. Hopefully we'll do some more Billy shoots for the year over. You know, she's been really a breath of fresh air as a photographer to work with. She's brought a lot of eyes to me. And we've made some really, you know, I don't want to use the word iconic. We've made some cool imagery that like is in my vein and her vein of what we've done. And I hope to continue with her, you know, with working in the music industry and her 21. I would love to shoot some more fighters. I've been working on a couple books over the years. I have a book I've been working on during the pandemic. That's what I did during the pandemic, is I decided it's time to make a book. I have a cool fucking book that, you know, I'm almost done with, that I'm going to add a few more things to it. And I also have an MMA book I've been banging on, as you probably know, for since 05, 04, 03, that like I'd go to events, shoot fighters. You know, I honestly wouldn't recognize the biggest actor in the world next to me, but I'll recognize like someone who fought on a WEC card, you know, like in 2004. I recognize all fighters. I fan out on athletes more than anything. And I hope to put this book out, because this MMA book I'm going to put out, or jiu-jitsu book, whatever you want to call it, I haven't decided if I'm going to combine them or not, maybe. I've tried a lot of jiu-jitsu as well. Is for the old heads who've been following this sport since, you know, 2000. It's going to be a lot of BJ Penn in there, Chuck Liddell, Brock Lesnar, you know, Mike Swick, like back, you know, fucking, you know, the Conor McGregor crowd won't know who they are, but the people, the diehard MMA people in that book, like, you know, will look to that book like, oh, cool, the glory era is in here. And then I'll have, you know, maybe some, I haven't been shooting MMA stuff for a while, but, you know, I was shooting up until like, you know, 2015, 16-ish area. Like I would always, you know, I was going to gyms, like tech DMing people, like just showing up at gyms and being like, can I shoot? You know what I mean? Like whether it be PKG or I went to Stockton and went to the Nick Diaz Academy once and shot those dudes. Like I got cool photos of like, you know, funny photos, like Nate Diaz skateboarding and like just like being around those dudes, and just a cool book that like, I think, or even like when Ruka would hire me to shoot BJ, just being in like Hilo, I think he lives in Hilo, right? Like, and being at his gym, like just cool experiences. So I want to work on that book. I got many books to put out, and yeah, I want to keep moving along with photography and staying relevant. You know, I've been doing this for 18, 19 years. Fuck man. It's a fight to keep it going. You know, like, I think about it, I'm like, fuck, I started doing this in 01. it's 19 fucking years and I'm still fucking relevant. So you see, it's, and it's hard to work, to do that. You know, I got to work at it. I got to like, just take, keep progressing and doing the right things. And I work hard at it. I work hard at like connecting with people and like using this fucking shitty app called Instagram to like do that. And, you know, I hate social media, man. I want to say this.
We're together on that. Preach.
I fucking hate Instagram. I think it's the devil. I think all social media is the devil. And I tried to get off of it 2 years ago. And my manager, Jamie, said, absolutely not. You'd be cutting your nose off to spite your face. And I know she's right.
For sure. For
sure. It was more about mental health. And with that said, I hate it. But man, it's such a strong tool in your pocket. I'm casting for a job, it's, and I get a model's book, I can go and find that model and see their personality. I can look at their story. It will tell me if I want to work with this person or not, if they can move. It's all right there. You know, whether you're, whatever you're doing, this tool is strong.
For sure. For sure.
It's also a fucking bummer, man. And I'm just glad that we didn't have this shit when I was in high school, because I think about how it makes me feel. And I think about as a kid in those formative years, like sixth grade through 11th, 12th grade, man, just seeing your friends, you not getting invited to something, you know, you seeing a party you didn't get invited to, not, you know, like, or just the bullying on Instagram of the kids. I'm fucking glad that we didn't have the internet growing up, because the internet's ruined a lot of things. You know, when I grew up in music, it was subcultures. I was into punk and metal. You had to find that shit. And then when they sold out, when they signed to a major, you were bummed. That's all gone. The internet's the internet. It's all at your fingertips. You know what I mean?
It's fucking with kids emotionally now. Yeah, we can see it. It's really fucking with kids emotionally. Fucking with their heads. Emotionally.
So I couldn't.
You're a grown ass man. Imagine a sixth grade kid that fucking has no control.
Yeah. Imagine being like, just man, like kids are fucking mean too, you know, like, but it's helped like relationships. It's helped relationships maybe and not helped relationships. Like shit, man, you have a girl you like and you go on Instagram and God damn, get off this thing. And then like, it's like a private investigating tool, right? You think something's going on fishy in any aspect of your life? Go down that Instagram, okay, hell, you're going to find it.
Or you could pretend, right? You could pretend to be somebody, but you're not really. It's just like 5 seconds, the coolest part of your life. And then
where were you last night? I wasn't there. Well, let me fucking see if you were there. You know, you can go, you can get to a K-hole. You're going to find what you want to find if you go deep enough in the internet. But I don't love it. I wish someone would buy Instagram and Twitter and trash them, throw them in the garbage. let's put everyone on an even playing field, you know, but you know, for someone that runs a small/big medium brand, you know, small in the means of a brand, but big in the means of a combat sports brand, the internet is your fucking shit. You know what I mean?
Like, it's your best tool.
It's your best tool. Like it's my best tool. Like I've been on jobs. I was on a Netflix job in Spain. And I said to the creative director, where did you find me? Your Instagram. Okay. Well, that just proved I'm shooting a massive job, big job. Well, you found me on Instagram. Website's cool. Instagram shows your personality. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Thank you. For sure. So yeah, to answer your short answer. Yeah, I just want to keep doing what I'm doing and shoot the things I want to shoot and progress in photography and get better. I'm still not as where I want to, you know, I tell people all the time, photography, just like jujitsu, it's always moving. Like, you know, I seen Kenny come in the house before. You've been doing, he's like, a third degree black belt, some shit. I don't know. Fourth.
Yeah, he's up there.
I've seen Kenny come in the house after training with Ryan and break through, you know, like, holy shit. Like, he'll be like, you know, like, holy fuck, I just got my mind blown on some theories in jiu-jitsu.
It's like Ryan's insane.
Yeah. And I've seen Ryan do that with Kenny.
Yeah, for sure.
And that shows me, same with photography. Man, I'm good at photography, I think. But, dog, there's always room to learn and keep going and make it bigger and better. Just like in jiu-jitsu. you know? That's why, like, jiu-jitsu gym guy come to this gym in Southern California with purple belt, get beat by white belt, because there's just levels, right? And you can always, and there's no rules. There's no rules, you know? Like, my favorite jiu-jitsu pages to follow are the ones that are, like, maybe would be looked down on. I don't know. Like, there's weird, you know, weird pages that they, like, outside the box stuff. I don't know. I love it.
Totally.
I love combat sports, and it's always evolving. You know, remember the UFC? Like, bro, you didn't see spinning elbows.
For sure. Now it's back to karate and shit. It's badass.
Like, you remember when Uriah, I don't know if it was Uriah Faber, it was somebody. Someone was in on a single and they threw a flying knee with the other leg. Then you saw everyone doing that. Then you saw, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's just like the evolution of everything is just so rad now. It's cool.
Someone will do like a, you know, you didn't see a lot of spinning back kicks before. And now that's like, you know, now
the it's standard. That's the standard.
You're learning MMA. You're not learning kickboxing.
For sure.
Going in as a, you're learning MMA. So it's funny to see the trends go where, like, you know, you'll see someone land some crazy shit and then Aaron will, you know, kicking people in the calf. Like, people have been doing it for a long time, but now people, I think, really understand, like, if you kick someone in the calf lower hard enough times, well, his striking is going to, you know, it's gonna slow down, right? But I love watching the trends in MMA and just watching the evolution of it and, like, watching these different techniques being used that maybe you didn't see, you know, even 5 years ago. And that's the same with photography, you know, like, there's really no rules to this shit besides, like, you need to make sure your photos, you know, legible, or, like, when you're fighting, you need to make sure you don't go outside the actual rules and do something illegal, right? But yeah, man, I just want to grow as a person and keep doing this and be involved in whatever aspects of photography or pop culture that I want to be in. Fighting and jiu-jitsu is one of them.
Well, Kenneth, man, I appreciate your time, man. And it was a great breakdown on everything, man. So if anything, you have an amazing day, and thank you for the time, and thank you for jumping on the podcast, brother. And we'll see each other very soon.
Yeah, I would love to see you. I know we were supposed to meet up before with Kenny. We need to do a project, do something, we need to hang, have lunch, do something. I know we're for sure.
We're overdue for sure.
But we overdue. And hey, I appreciate you asking me to do this. I've done this like maybe once. I was asked to do it last week from someone else, and I said no because I was I didn't feel. I don't know. I appreciate you having me do this. I had a good time doing it, and I kind of learned how to do this.
Well, I'm pretty sure the listeners got some really, really good shit out of it. So I'm stoked you jumped on too, man. We're honored and humbled. So thank you so much, man. Have a good weekend. We'll talk soon, brother.
You too, man. You guys have a good one.
Later, bro.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for catching up on the podcast, guys. If you could just give it a like, subscribe, and maybe a share on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, that would be much appreciated. Thank you so much. You guys have an amazing day.